listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
I'm Jonathan Capehart, sitting in today for Leonard Lopate. NYU 2031, New York University's controversial plan to add some 2 million square feet of new construction to two superblocks south of Washington Square, has been the subject of heated debate over the last several months, with Greenwich Village residents, politicians, and the university's own faculty and staff all weighing in on the project. Over the last few weeks, 34 of NYU's departments and divisions have passed resolutions against the plan. So we've invited three NYU faculty members to the show to explain their concerns. Jeff Goodwin, professor of sociology, Andrew Ross, professor of social and cultural analysis, and Anne Pellegrini, professor of performance studies and religious studies. Welcome to you all. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
So what's the capital of... Just kidding. They were worried that there would be a pop quiz. And I'm going to start with you. In case anyone out there is unaware of the plan, can you give us a brief summary of what's involved?
Yes. NYU 2031 is the sort of shorthand for the expansion 2031, because that's the projected end of construction. So what we're anticipating is at least 20 years of nonstop construction in the two super blocks between Washington Square, between West 3rd Street and Bleecker, bounded by LaGuardia Place and Mercer. So two super blocks, and NYU wants to build 2.2 million square feet. That's approximately the Empire State Building. And this would increase the density of that neighborhood in an extraordinary way, that predicting about 10,000 additional people in foot traffic daily. Some of those will be new residents. Some of those will just be people coming in to use the new commercial space. It will have a devastating impact on the neighborhood. And it's not just about sort of density. It's also going to be building up. So NYU will literally be towering over its neighbors already more than it's doing so.
So, Andrew, why have 34 departments and schools passed resolutions against the plan?
There's a lot of concern. I've been at NYU for almost 20 years, and I've never seen anything like this. It's a debt-financed growth plan. None of the faculty or students or Greenwich Village residents really have been convinced in any way of the rationale for the plan. Greenwich Village Chamber of Commerce is the only entity who's actually been in support of the plan, and they certainly have their interests. But our administration, you know, which is a very small executive class that's gotten used to making unilateral decisions, is increasingly committed to growing this university in a way that's very typical of what's happening with higher education nationwide.
Yeah, I'm going to get to that in a second. But is this an unusual step for departments and schools to individual departments to generally vote on a university's building plans?
It's unusual, but I think it does speak to the extremity of the situation and the concern that so many of us have, that the administration is overreaching, that it's going to be, the university is going to be over-leveraged. NYU was insolvent in 1973, and a critical mass of its faculty believe that this plan will bankrupt the university.
Jeff, let me bring you into this conversation. What percentage do you think of the entire university do these 34 departments and schools represent, do you think?
I have no idea.
Has your department voted in favor or against the plan, or said anything about it?
My department has voted against it, and like all of these votes, was quite lopsided. We're not talking about close votes. I mean, we're talking about unanimous or nearly unanimous opposition. So in my department, I believe the vote was 22 against, 1 for the plan with a couple of abstentions. And that's typical of all these votes. They've been very lopsided. Even the even departments which one doesn't associate with activism or radicalism of any type, political activism, I'm talking about economics and the School of Business, very concerned about this plan. And I know the vote at Stern, our business school, was 52 against, 3 for the plan. Again, this is quite typical. If I could just add one thing
to
Andrew's point, you know, why so many faculty are concerned about this, about NYU buildings. Well, they're being built in our backyard. The two super blocks are where a very large proportion, I think it's something like 40% of NYU faculty actually live with their children. And suddenly the thought of these four huge new buildings, 10,000 new people in the area is really going to the construction, which will last for 20 years. All this is going to be very disruptive and of course, deteriorate the quality of life that that we've enjoyed there.
Mm-hmm. Just to remind listeners, I'm Jonathan Capehart here for Leonard Lopate, and I'm speaking with three professors from NYU. We're talking about the NYU 2031 plan, Jeff Goodwin, Andrew Ross, and Ann Pellegrini. I want to get to something Andrew alluded to a second ago, and that's this notion of, so NYU President John Sexton has said that the plan is necessary to address the school's need for space, and that, quote, NYU must grow to maintain excellence. Do you agree with that statement?
I don't.
Is it necessary?
By NYU's own figure, for the first 10 years of projected construction, so this is a two-decade plan, the first 10 years, only 17% to 18%, this is NYU's figure, only 17% to 18% of that is earmarked for academic spaces, 40 classrooms. So we want to know what's happening with the other 83% of that growth in the first 10 years. I mean, yes, does NYU need more space? I think faculty could agree we could use some more spaces. But faculty have not been consulted about actually what sort of space, how this is to be implemented. This is among the reasons why departments have taken it into our own hands, departments and programs, to let the administration know what we think. We are NYU. Right? We are not. We are loyal faculty members of NYU. We're dedicated to the institution. We're opposed to the plan, not to NYU.
Well, let me ask you, there's another part of what John Sexton said that I neglected to mention. And he has also said that NYU lags behind, quote, peer schools like Harvard and Princeton in terms of square footage per student. First question, is NYU a peer school to Harvard and Princeton? I'm surprised he didn't mention Yale.
Obviously not. What's the driving factor here is that space per capita for students is one of the main metrics that U.S. News in the World
U.S. News and World Report for the ranking.
For their rankings. And it's one of the ways that the universities feel they have to drive themselves up in the rankings. And it's one of the reasons why so many universities across the country have embarked on these capital-intensive, large-scale building campaigns, which is one of the primary factors in skyrocketing tuition costs.
But is there not a need for more space? I mean, isn't that a legitimate concern?
Of course, but this plan clearly isn't about space. We're not quite sure what it's about, but as Ann mentioned, only less than 20% of the space in the 2031 is classroom space. They wanted a hotel. They wanted a huge 30-floor hotel as part of this project that's been done away with. They want commercial space, and curiously, they want a lot more dorms. They want to bring in more undergraduates. Now, this makes no sense. If you're trying to build more space for your undergraduate population to bring in more undergraduates in dorms, which is what some of this space is allocated for, just digs you deeper in the hole. It increases the need for the classroom and laboratory space, which they're not building. So we're a bit confused, quite frankly. And there are all sorts of theories about what's really behind this, but clearly space doesn't seem to be driving the plan. I mean, they wanted a hotel, for crying out loud.
Well, a caller mentions that NYU has also expanded on the east side of Manhattan in the 30s. They've just opened a campus in Brooklyn. And what do you say to those fellow NYU deans and professors who testified that their departments desperately need more space?
Again, I'm I'm at Tisch, which is in desperate need of new studio space. It's the School of the Arts, and I am in no way denying that. I know my colleagues are, you know, trying to do the best they can with the kind of shortfall we have currently. But I dare say that even those faculty and deans who have been speaking out in favor of this plan would be happy to see a reduction in the scope of it, right? But if, again, if 17 to 18% is what is being designated for academic use, why not do 17 to 18%? It's really not clear to us. It seems to us that NYU is asking for, I should say the NYU brass, are asking for a blank check for a project that is far in excess of the needs. And the language of need, and we are not denying that there is actually legitimate need for space, mm-hmm. the language of need is being used to advance an agenda of which we're quite mystified.
Has a business plan been released
No.
on this at all?
No, I mean, this is one of the causes for concern. None of NYU's fiscal affairs are transparent, and the university has not, the administration rather, has not let anyone know, and I don't know if City Council has asked them for a business plan, but how do you raise $6 billion, which is a projected estimate for this growth?
I was going to mention, I see estimates between $4 billion and yeah. $8 billion, but $6 billion still, it's a lot of money.
Yeah, which entity can raise $6 billion in the current economic climate? I think we know where the source of the revenue will come from, and that's from our students, from an increased student debt burden.
So, well, what do you think those estimates are based on, this $4 billion, $6 billion, $8 billion project?
There's no plan that's been released. Some of us are suspicious if there's a plan to be released. We have no idea where these figures come from. And again, remember, we have we're not a university with a large endowment like our so-called peer institutions, Harvard, Princeton, and Yale. We have a $2 billion endowment. So this project is, you know, three times the size of our endowment, and it's just a big mystery where this money's going to come from. And I think Andrew's right. We all anticipate that our students and future students are going to be picking up part of the tab for this.
Well, I see your NYU's tuition is now more than $40,000 a year. So does that put NYU in the ranks of one of the more expensive private colleges
in that the we are among the elite? Yes. I mean, you know, NYU is tuition driven. That's one of the – that does help to explain one of the mysteries of how, on the one hand, the claim is made that NYU needs space. That's why we have to do this mammoth 2.2 million square foot building project, of which only 17 to 18% is for classroom use, but we have to build dorms. That might seem contradictory. Why are you bringing in new students if what you need is new space? Because then there's an endless math going on here. You have to keep building more space for all the new students you're bringing in. But it's because we're tuition driven and we need the money those students will bring in.
But is the fear that the tuition already at more than $40,000, that once this is built, tuition is going to have to be jacked up even higher just to pay for the construction that's planned for.
And to service the debt. I mean, if, again, the projections of $4 to $8 billion about the total cost of this, let's say it's $6 billion. Let's sort of, you know, do some averaging here. I mean, I think the service on the debt annually would be $300 million, mm-hmm. which is extraordinary, which would basically be every tuition dollar would have to go into servicing the debt each year. Mm-hmm. It's not what would be left over for operations.
And what about student debt? How does NYU rank in terms of student debt? Which has been in the news all over.
We're number one.
It's a national leader.
there we lead our
peers, real and imagined. Yes, we among major universities, public or private, NYU students carry the greatest debt. I saw a figure of an average of $41,000. So that's astounding. That's really unconscionable, and I think a lot of us would rather see our resources used to address this issue rather than driving up more debt through this kind of reckless spending.
I'm talking about the proposed NYU expansion plan, which is coming up for a vote next month in the City Council with three NYU professors, Jeff Goodwin, Mark Crispin Miller, and Ann Pellegrini. And we'll be back with more after a break.
I'm Jonathan Capehart, and today for Leonard Lopate, speaking with Professors Jeff Goodwin, Andrew Ross, and Anne Pellegrini about the NYU 2031 gigantic construction project that's proposed for the village here in Manhattan. Now, we were talking about the student debt and concerns about financing, and so are you also concerned that the university will finance the plan by cutting other costs, such as, oh, I don't know, faculty salaries, for example?
Absolutely. And our pay is not has not been very robust in the past decade. We've been falling behind, and due to inflation and some wage freezes, salary freezes over the years. So, of course, there's tremendous concern that cost-cutting to support this plan will affect ourselves and staff. And in addition to the 34 departments who've expressed their opposition, we should note that the staff union at NYU, the clerical workers, the department aides, their union has voted as well in opposition to this plan.
Are you all tenured?
Mm-hmm. We are.
Yes.
Does that
we probably would not be here.
I was going to say, does that explain why you're here, and two, why you're so vocal about this?
It does help. I mean, we have 117 faculty members who have publicly signed their names to a group called the Faculty Against the Sexton Plan. And this is the reason for the name is we're not against the university. We're actually really committed to NYU, which is why we're so deeply concerned.
Sure.
But there are another 250 people who are members of the listserv for this group who don't feel they can safely sign their names publicly.
How many faculty members are there? How large of a community
full-time,
are we talking?
Full-time, I believe, full-time ladder, is that about 2,000 at
mm-hmm.
NYU?
Yeah.
But, you know, it's the cuts to faculty salaries, it's that will take the form of, you know, salary compression. But so we don't get huge raises, but no one's getting huge raises other than corporate titans. So that's less the issue than what will happen is, and this is nationwide a problem. It's certainly a huge problem at NYU, and here NYU is exemplary, that rather than hiring someone into a tenure-track job or someone into a, you know, a full-time faculty position, increasingly colleges and universities, again, NYU is no exception here, is hiring adjuncts. So these are people who are paid, you know, maybe $2,000, $5,000 to teach a class.
I was going to ask about
so
that.
So students are not working face-to-face with professors. They're having actually wonderful adjuncts, people who are, you know, very well-trained, but can't do the same kind of FaceTime because they're traveling from university to university to patch together what is barely a living wage. So it's the adjunctification of higher education is one of the ways in which universities cut costs for the teaching, which is supposedly the mission of educational institutions, so that they can put their money into a growing sort of strata of the administrative class. So we see a huge growth over the last 2 to 3 decades of vice provosts, vice deans, deans, vice presidents. So there's been a huge growth in salaries for the administrative class, and a huge brick and mortar growth as, you know, universities build amenities to meet those wonderful Q ratings and metrics of on U.S. News and World Report. That's where the money's going. It's not going into the actual teaching mission of universities and colleges.
Mm-hmm. Andrew, do you feel the media has been reluctant to cover the fact that the faculty are against this plan?
That's certainly our impression. Leading media institutions in New York City have been fairly supportive of the administration. And this may sound a little conspiratorial to some of your listeners, but it doesn't surprise us. I mean, I teach urban studies at NYU, and we talk about the permanent government in New York City a lot, which is the interlocking influence of media elites, real estate elites, Wall Street elites, and they're very well represented on NYU's Board of Trustees, which is another big factor in this. The permanent government of New York City is very well represented in the Board of Trustees. I just add one more category of employee to what Anne and Jeff were talking about, graduate assistants. At NYU, our administration has been at war with the graduate assistants over its efforts to eradicate the union there. And NLRB has will be issuing some
National
decision.
Labor Relations Board.
Yeah, we'll be issuing a decision on that. So that will be a big issue in the fall. And unfortunately, it may be the case that the administration will be at war with its faculty, at war with its graduate students, at war with Greenwich Village residents, and also at economic war with its undergraduate students by piling on additional student debt burdens. That is a terrible position for an administration to be in. So we may be living not just in a large construction zone, but also a war zone come the fall. And we don't like the prospect of that at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, as we've mentioned many times, this is a project that's calls for 20 years of construction in a two super block area where the Washington Square Village and Silver Towers are located. Do any of you live in two? Anne does. Jeff does. Andrew, you're lucky you will.
I separate church from state.
Smart man. So then you are looking at the prospect of having two decades worth of construction right outside your window.
Literally,
indeed. For
yeah.
Now, just to play devil's advocate here, let's say these two super blocks were elsewhere, not literally outside your window, but a couple of blocks away. Would the intensity of your opposition to the Sexton plan be there?
I would think so. I mean, the village, the residents of the village were really out in force against this plan. They don't live on the super block. By and large, there are a few residents who do, but the bulk of the hundreds of people who were showing up at meeting after meeting, which Community Board 2 held recently on all sorts of issues, were very anxious, very upset with this plan because it obviously is going to spill over into their streets as well. You know, if you build 2.5 million square feet and 10,000 new people have to access this area, more people, more traffic, it's going to affect a whole lot of people. So it's not just because it's in our backyard. It's in our neighborhood. And we really are, we think of ourselves as village residents, no different really from other village residents. And it is a residential neighborhood. This has to be emphasized. What NYU wants to do really is change the character of a residential neighborhood into a more commercialized mixed-use space with a whole lot more people, reneging on a historic promise that they made to the community that they would not develop these open mm-hmm. spaces. I mean, if you know the buildings in question, they're quite large, mm-hmm. and they were opposed at the time by many village residents. But the deal was, okay, go ahead, build these large buildings, but on the condition that there is open space, that the famous Sasaki Garden, right. which is going to be destroyed, a key park near and dear to the hearts of many of us, dog runs, etc., keep that open space. You must keep it as a condition for building these huge buildings. And that was the deal, and that's really what NYU now wants to renege on and commercialize this space.
I should also add that in the wording of resolutions, again, there have been 34 resolutions passed by programs and departments. Many of the resolutions explicitly say that that the reasons the department is coming out against this plan include concern for their colleagues who do live in the super blocks, but then go on to say this goes beyond the question of the duress mm-hmm. that people, the physical and actually emotional distress people will be under living in construction for 20 years, but the long-term financial health and academic mission of the university. And just one other thing to say, which is that, mm-hmm. you know, Greenwich Village is actually a jewel for the entire city of New York. There's a sense in which this project is in everybody's backyard. Hundreds of thousands of tourists come to New York every year and want to go to the village. It's actually one of the charmed destinations in the city. So this is not a NIMBY objection we're raising, but if you want to talk about backyards, why not claim the village as the backyard for all of New York and protect it?
You know, listeners have been calling in and they've writing in and mentioning the fact that Columbia is also going through an expansion, and there's opposition to that expansion as well. Have you or any of the faculty at NYU who are opposed to the Sexton plan been in touch with the folks at Columbia? Any kind of alliance formed? Any kind of discussions back and forth of any kind?
I don't know of anything that's along those lines yet, but We're well aware of efforts in Chinatown, in Chelsea, and other communities in Brooklyn, the Atlantic Yards project, et cetera. Groups are starting to link up, share their experiences. Obviously, this is something that's not limited to Greenwich Village, but this kind of growth, hyper-growth, displacing residential areas, putting up huge commercial complexes. It's going on all over the city. I'm sure many of the listeners are familiar about what's going on in their own neighborhoods. I think these groups are starting to find each other and link up and share strategies. We don't have any explicit ties, as far as I know, with the Columbia conflict. But maybe we should look into that.
We had another caller who mentioned the fact that a caller from the West Village who said that this project will put a burden on surrounding areas as well. So it gets to the point, I think, Anne, that you were making, that this project, even though it'll be in the two super block area, will have an impact on everyone's backyard who lives in the West Village. So where's the impetus for this plan? I mean, I know John Sexton has said that, you know, have to be with the peers, Harvard and Princeton, in terms of square footage per student, but it had to have. Did it come from President Sexton, or did it come from someplace else? Do we know?
I think it's fair to describe, and I'm ashamed to say this, but I think it's fair to describe our institution as a growth machine at this point in time. The growth is not just within New York City; it's globally. We now have three campuses. We're building a fourth one in Shanghai, and this is tantamount to building an entirely new campus. NYU almost went bankrupt in the 1970s because it was trying to operate two campuses. Now we're talking about five campuses and expansion overseas on a global scale. And the thing about growth machines is that they're driven by this very sort of nebulous principle that growth pays for itself, and there's no evidence that that is the case. Growth is a very efficient way of transferring public monies into private pockets, and that's part of the story also. But it certainly doesn't pay for itself, and someone will end up footing the bill for the growth. But the principle of growth is something that seems unquestioned within our administration, as in many other universities right now.
Can you talk about the idea of the corporate university? And what does that mean?
It means the universities are increasingly run as corporations, with an eye towards the bottom line, cost-cutting, in the ways that we've talked about, the move to adjunct faculty, which means lower salaries, fewer benefits, but just more generally a corporate mentality in which the bottom line replaces education as the primary mission of the university.
And we certainly saw this with the recent controversy at the University of Virginia, where the president was, you know, that
right.
fired, reinstated it as of yesterday. But this was a conflict in a style of, well, management on the one hand and a style of leadership in the other. So a president who was trying to work incrementally to sort of address a crisis for public education in particular. Public universities are facing particular challenges. And a board that wanted a style of corporate governance, which is top-down and which doesn't consult with the people who make up, who people a university. Universities actually aren't corporations. They're made up of people. And treating them like corporations denies the kinds of vibrant ecosystems that exist within universities and make them hum in ways that are so vital to teaching, to learning.
We're running out of time, but I want to read a comment that Hugh left for us, and I want you to react to it. He writes, "The irony here is that NYU has already shown that it can be a world-class university without the largest endowment or the snazziest buildings." He goes on to cite the law school, the business school, and the philosophy department, and then says, quote, if NYU gets large enough, it gets too big to fail.
Well, I think that last comment is a very interesting one, because just to return to an earlier part of the discussion, the question, how does a nonprofit institution like NYU raise $6 billion in the credit markets? Multinational corporations right now find it difficult to do this. And one of the reasons why NYU's credit ratings are so high, and it may be that Moody's and other credit rating agencies are the only institutions that actually get to see any of the balance or the books, the fiscal books of NYU. One of the reasons is the perception that this is a very secure institution with an academic mission. It's federally guaranteed in all sorts of ways because much of the revenue comes from federal resources. And in essence, it's a very safe bet. And what we're here to say is that an alarming number, a critical mass of our faculty with expertise in these areas believe that the administration is overreaching and that we're heading towards potential bankruptcy if we take on these kinds of financial commitments.
Mm-hmm. Either of you wanted to jump in before we go?
That, you know, the economics department, Jeff mentioned this earlier, voted against this plan 29-0. Economics department has 3 Nobel Prize laureates, which NYU is justly proud of. But this same department is very concerned about this plan, and because of the issue of transparency, because of the issue of just the potential financial ruin of NYU, which would be ruinous for the city of New York. NYU employs 16,000 people. It's actually a huge engine for the New York City economy. So NYU bills itself as a private university in the public interest. We're not convinced that this plan serves the public interest, let alone the interests even of NYU.
And real fast, Jeff?
City Council is going to be voting on this plan very shortly. They really need to demand to see the business plan for this. How can they possibly approve this plan without understanding where the money is coming from? That's really their responsibility.
I've been speaking about the proposed NYU expansion plan, which is coming up for a vote next month in the City Council with 3 NYU professors, Jeff Goodwin, Andrew Ross, and Ann Pellegrini. Thank you, all of you, for joining us
today.
Thank you. Thanks.